Previously on the Social Proof Podcast.
So you recorded Wu-Tang?
Yeah, we did. We did Raekwon. I know we worked on Raekwon's Immobilarity.
Word.
We got a plaque for that. And then we didn't work on their first album, but we worked with different ones of them.
What was it like having them all? Was they all in that thing?
Nah, because, well, my homeboy, before their first album came out, my homeboy Jason Staten, he's from Lansing, he used to do national street promotions. And he brought them to Michigan State. And we, me and him was driving around the Midwest, and I remember everybody, who these karate dudes and whatever. So we and that was Raekwon tried to beat up one of the dudes because he ordered his pizza wrong. I remember that.
No way. What happened?
Yeah, he was like, you trying to play me, son? They ordered the wrong pizza. They might have put pepperoni on it, and he was trying to whoop the dude's butt. But by the time, you know, we came to the studio, it's like a mutual respect. Like, I tell people, when you walk into a place and you see cigarette ashes and stuff all over, then you act accordingly. When you walk into a place and it's nice and people are respectful, then you kind of give what you get. So we didn't have it. You got to remember, a lot of times it wasn't a lot of black people on the technical side that owned studios. So these people were going in rock studios and country studios, and they wasn't comfortable with all them people around.
Right.
They thought our kicks was too loud and the music was too loud and it was hitting too hard. But we like, come on in, man. We ain't tripping. Turn it up. Crank it up. Y'all smoke. We got a smoking room. Go ahead. Oh, y'all got 30 people? No problem. We got a lounge and whatever. So that's why I keep saying it's weird that if you ever had an opportunity to look at recording studios before we opened in 95, you couldn't do all the stuff. We was the first studio to do listening parties. Mm. We're the first studio to do birthday parties, to turn into like an event facility, podcast. We was the first people to start paying engineers and put them on the payroll, and they worked for the studio before they were independent clients. Yeah. You couldn't get into a commercial studio, and commercial studios were stale. Mm. They were all, like the guy that designed ours, we barely picked him. He got that job. Because when all his work, it looked like it was white and sterile. And it was squares, and they looked like a hospital. And I remember I called him to tell him that we ain't going with them. He was like, well, Curtis, you know, those are all the designs that our clients pick. We're really looking forward to working with you and Bob because we know you guys are going to allow us to do some cool stuff. We got all of this stuff planned out with curves and different angles. And that's what sold them. And we got them, and we went crazy. We freaked it. And then so all of this stuff that's going on, man, they weren't able. You think you was able to get in Bobby Brown's studio and throw a listening party or do a podcast or have a meet and greet? You couldn't go into Jermaine's. We changed all of that stuff, man. You know what I mean? I'll never really pound on our chest, but I just tell people is you go back and look at studios. Studios weren't open to the public.
Yeah.
You had to be in the music industry to get in them studios, man. And we changed that. So now I look at all these, the whole model is the model that we put in place. Hiring the engineers, good staff, multiple rooms, multi-purpose, being able to do video, audio, parties, listening parties. We did all, the first one, I'm telling you a lot of stuff, you cut this. The first thing, this is what, I'm gonna tell you this story, this almost broke me. One of my girls that worked at the front, her name was Frances, she came up with this concept, she called it the producer's ball.
The producer's ball.
Yep. And we're going to have a bunch of different producers that's up and coming come in and play some of their stuff. This is up and coming. So we had Polo the Don. Y'all didn't really, you know.
Upcoming.
We had Justice League. We had Drummer Boy. Timberland came through, which was a problem. And
why was it a problem?
Because it was too big. So, and then Jazzy Faye. A bunch of people, right? This was early when they career. And so prior to that, the week before, we did our re-grand opening where we opened the big room in our 10-year anniversary. So I had like, you know, four police officers from Atlanta outside. I had valet and I had security in. We was prepared for it. I knew we was going to have like 300-400 people. It wasn't no problem. This party, I just thought we just doing a producer's ball. It ain't going to be no big deal. A few people going to come. And I didn't have any police or security. And I lost control of the room. It was probably about 300-400 people in the studio, in the parking lot and everything. And I couldn't control it. And they wouldn't listen to me. And I remember, and so we had these producers playing stuff. And then Timberland's, it was his assistant came in there and he was in New York. He was just rude. Man, let me play this. Timbo on the phone. Let me play this track. I'm like, you ain't part of the program. And I couldn't control it. I literally couldn't get to the other side of the room to stop nobody from doing nothing. And it lost control. And so for a whole year, I wouldn't do another listening party. And mind you, we had did Jeezy's listening party, Ludacris, Akon, Rick Ross, and I was so scarred up. And we had, what the problem was, they blocked the dumpster off and all that food from the grand opening. We didn't schedule nobody to pick it up, and they wouldn't come get it. So by the time they would come, we had trash bags everywhere. It was maggots all over the place. It was so bad, the homeless dude wouldn't take $100 to clean it up. And so when we did that, it scarred me up, and I was like, I ain't never doing that again. I'm just going, we can just collect our money with two or three people here. Mm-hmm. And then people kept calling me, and then I said, you know what? I need to put together a package that if I do it, then I won't be mad. Mm-hmm. So that's why our listening parties cost about $5,500. I make people pay for valet. Mm-hmm. You don't have an option.
Right.
You're going to pay for 4 Atlanta police officers, 3 security. You're going to pay to get my carpet clean. You're going to pay the maid to come in and clean up that night, and you're going to pay me for an extra dumpster fee. And I'm going to make you rent speakers so you don't blow mine out to put it in the front of the room. So it's like, so everybody be, when we do them, that's why we only do the big ones, because it's like $5,500. And they come at me like, you know, Rick Ross would be like, well, we already got our security. I said, he your security. He ain't going to listen to me.
Right.
We hiring whatever. And, you know, and then I remember we did one of the ones, I tried to be cool with Rich Homie Quan, and he was like, we're going to do one, and I promise it won't be no more than 10 people. And I'm like, I'm telling you, man, we ain't letting them people in. Man, it got so bad that people was hopping the fence, and his parent, he came with 5 people, so his parents couldn't get in, and it was a headache.
Dang.
And I was like, I'll never bend again, you know, because people want to, they want to tell you that they ain't going to do all this stuff, but they don't, they can't control it. And then, sure. I mean, you know, one of the cool ones, the biggest, we did R. Kelly's. But they were so professional, because he's like, they gave us a guest list, and it was like, if they ain't on the guest list, we don't. So we got there. We was like, you can't come in. And we did that one or whatever. But, you know, I learned a lesson. That producer's ball. But again, nobody was in studios. You couldn't come. You didn't have events at studios,
right,
man.
Right.
You couldn't go tour. I'm the studio owner, and they wouldn't even show me their studio and show me the rates back when we started in 95.
Right.
So all of this stuff that you see now, this new model, is what we put in place. And like I said, a lot of people, everybody, Coach K got 50,000 square feet right now. And he's trying to do a studio, and he calls me about the architect and who designing it. And so I tell him some stuff, and then he brings his architect to the studio to look around. I show him the stuff and all this stuff, and I make.
Business is tough, all right? And you have to keep your brain focused on the main thing by limiting distractions. But let me show you how business works. I'll give you some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, and delivering products or services, the more margins you have and the more money you get to keep. But with higher expenses on materials and employees and distribution and borrowing money, of course, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything is more expensive these days, y'all. From food to employees to systems, inflation is going crazy. So it behooves you, it'd be wise to find proven ways to cut costs and boost performance all at the same time. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/socialproof. netsuite.com/socialproof. netsuite.com/socialproof.
Get myself available, Stone them, with Akon them, every different studio that you see. It's to the point now where, like, a lot of people, when they see reality shows, they'll call me and be like, they in our studio. Yeah. And I would be like, nigga, every studio ain't ours. But it's even now when I look at stuff, I'd be like, is that our studio? Because they copied our diffuser.
Right.
They copied our panels. They copied our ceiling. So a lot of people come in and bring their architect and be like, I want you to build this room. I'm doing the B room. And so when Jeff them at DTP last year around this time, I was going to their studio because Jeff wanted to build out their rooms. Mm-hmm. And then when Jason Jeter's doing his place, I go out to his place. We went to India's house, Indy Irie,
word,
and helped design her stuff. Her dad built it. We helped design it. We went out to Montel Jordan's church. They didn't hire us, but they consulted, and then they went with somebody else. So we be out in all these different places.
Wow.
Jason just did a retreat at a cabin 2 weeks ago, and we sent two engineers out. Luther built his rig, designed it.
Shout out to Luther.
Took
man.
The mics, and we went out to the camp, staffed it, and did it for a week, and they never had no problems. So we be doing all this different stuff, and my philosophy is just different. I'd be like, if Atlanta has multiple great rooms, it makes Atlanta better. It doesn't make sense to have one good room and all of this BS. So I always try to reach out to people that's doing home studios and doing stuff that need help, because if we can help, we want to help. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Kurt, I appreciate you coming through, man. This is like, it was like a lesson in Atlanta history. You know what I'm saying? Like, it is a staple in Atlanta. Like, you guys are stamped in Atlanta history because... And I'm realizing that it's a mix of, one, you know what you're doing sonically. Like, you just, like, who would think that you're going to treat the electricity? Or who would think, like, when we went to the studio, you said you had, like, rubber on top of the roof.
Yeah, to kill the raindrop.
To kill the raindrop. Like, you're thinking past. And then, you know, we're going through, all right, making sure it's not a square room, right. And it has to be all done. Like, you know everything, yeah. Almost everything about sound.
You know what? I do want to say this, too. So, like, what I remember, I think I was watching them. I'm competitive. So, when I was watching them verses, it was, like, a long time ago. And I was like, you know what? I'm about to get my 20 songs ready in case another studio want to change.
Let's go.
Right? So, here was the problem, Dave. So... I got my little leather binder and I started writing down songs that I know we did. I'm like, we did Ether. Nas did his verse, Ether there.
Nas did his Ether verse at Patchwork?
Yeah, we did the Pig Pimpin'.
Were you in the room?
He left his rhyme book and I got it. And I kept it in the office and I was reading it, and he was like writing, it looked like he was writing a movie. It was real vivid, like his rhyme. The intro, the sun goes down, whatever. So I'm like, I know what this is. I put it in my office, I keep it for years, and Mike threw it away.
No!
And then, so I'm mad, you know, and last year, KRS-One came up there, and he left his rhyme book. I said, what? And they called me. I said, put it in the office. I came up there the next day. I seen Rapture Step In. This was last year. I seen old rhyme.
Oh, my goodness.
I said, let me call him and tell him he left this. And he was like, I'm coming back up there today. And I gave it back to him. And but I'd be wanting to keep that stuff, man.
Nas's rhyme book.
He left it when he wrote Ether.
Yeah.
And so I'm going through songs, right? I'm like, you know, okay, Jeezy stuff. But then, so then I said, that's too much. 25 years, I can't pick 20 songs. So then I said, well, let me go to, because here's the problem is that when you're doing these whole albums, okay, so I'm gonna ask you, which Outkast song you gonna pick? Which Goody Mob?
Yeah.
Which Jeezy? Which Tip? You doing 3-4 albums. Yeah. Which Sierra? Which Monica? Which TLC? Which Waka? Which whoever, right? So I'm going, so I said, you know what? I'm going to knock this down. Let me get 20 artists. I start writing. So out of respect, I said, I'm going to start in Atlanta, but we done did records for Snoop, you know, all over the place, you know? So I start writing down artists. I said, fuck it. I can't even do it. Because I couldn't narrow it down to 20 artists because... Then I would have to go 20
You couldn't
artists.
Even narrow down to 20
no,
artists.
Because then I would go, like, if I'm looking at Sierra album, what am I going to take? Okay, everybody, the commercial is goodies, but I like that Ooh record that Ludacris did. Yeah. And then, you know, whatever. I used to have a demo when Missy did the vocals on Goodies. I would hear her voice. She was rapping it. It was dope. And I said, I'm going to keep this forever. And my damn computer crashed. I never took it off the drive. But so that was my problem, because then I started looking at, like, okay, we did Tip's first 3 or 4 albums, Jeezy's first 3 or 4, 5 or 6 of Gucci's, all these different artists. Mm-hmm. So then I couldn't even, and I said, a lot of people call me when they do these documentaries or shows about Atlanta and they get left off. And they be like, man, they left me off. So I'm real conscious about that if I do something to make sure that I at least offer everybody to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. So if I was to put out a top 20 songs at Patchwork and leave off the old Let's Do It remix, that ain't cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I just was like, so when they did the battle, we put out we did a playlist of Gucci. If you can find it, it's called Show to Work on Spotify and Apple. It's 79 records. They go back and forth. It start with Gucci, Jeezy, Gucci, Jeezy. And those are some of the records, all of them. That ain't even all of them. We stopped at 79 records that we worked on. So it's a playlist on Spotify and Apple Music. It's called Show to Work. It's underneath our Patchwork thing. And it's 79 songs that they worked on at the studio.
Unbelievable.
And so then that's why I was telling Oz, I said, well, maybe we're going to have to do years. Because even if we can't do decades, we can't do 5 years, because we literally now, we still doing, we usually do it between 11 to 13 sessions a day right now.
Mm. Listen, family, Black representation in media is vital, okay? If we don't use our voice, we lose our voice in radio, television, print, etc. I remember listening to Arsenio Hall back in the day. I remember watching Oprah. I remember hearing these Black voices in media, and it made me always want to be a part of it. The next generation, however, of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. And in the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories and Black truths, okay? I'm checking out NPR, and I believe they have the real. The hosts understand the assignment and are telling the real stories of the Black experience. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, obviously, but now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and as Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR wherever you get podcasts.
And so, you know, we start around 10 and finish around 6 every morning, 7 days a week. So if you try to do a year, 13 times 365, yeah. You know what I mean? It's hard. So that's why I keep saying I can't really. So I'm like, are we going to do R&B? Are we going to do gospel? Are we going to do hip hop, Southern, man, East Coast? Like, how are we going to make a playlist? So that Gucci Jeezy was our first time that we ever put something kind of out there, because I didn't want to disrespect people. And I said, well, we got to figure it out. Yeah. Like, either you're going to start in 95, or what do you do? Do you pick the criteria? The album had to go platinum. I don't want to do that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like, it's big. We did, we was doing That's Just My Baby Daddy.
Oh, word.
We did that record.
Yeah.
We recorded and mixed it. We did My Boo. You know what I mean? We did Shorty Swing My Way.
What?
It's them records. That's why I be telling. We did the one with Michael Bivins, When Will I See You Smile Again, when he was singing over the bass. We did that, most of that bass album, Rhythm and Quad. So that's why I be telling people, I be telling my wife, and I was like, you was reaching to me and didn't even know it. It's these records that you don't know that we did. Like, You know what I mean? And so, you got to go way back to the Booty Shake. We was doing that stuff.
Dang, that's crazy. Yo, man, it's just so much history. I just want to, like, go to lunch with you and just keep talking to you, like, just because there's so many stories that we didn't tell. Like, you got
we struggling, man. We working on our documentary for our 25th anniversary. And right now, the cut down, I mean, I think we interviewed like 19 people and we talked to them for an hour. And so we had all this footage, and then we got it cut down to 4 hours. And it's so many holes in it. Like, I mean, it's too much. And so that's why I was like, you don't really know how to, I really don't know how to wrap around it. And so, like, I was like, when you asked me to do it, because normally I don't be going out telling a whole bunch of stories. And I was like, really, you can't wait. If 25 years is hard, it's just going to get harder at 26, 29, 30.
For sure.
And more memories keep getting created, and you can't really go back. And so it's hard for us, like on our timeline, we try to celebrate projects. So we, like, I think we just in 1 week, we put up Ludacris's album. It was 19 years old. Mm. And then a day or two later, I think we had a T.I. album up. And then a few days earlier, we had a Missy album. And then so almost every day, it's like an anniversary. And we try to, and a lot of times, they don't even be posting it. Like, I'll put up the anniversary of this Outkast or this, and I'll tell Jason, it's your birthday. Right. And we'll, you know, whatever. So we trying to do it, but we create more memories. You know what I mean? We steadily create new stuff with some of these new people. And so I was telling Oz, I said, with the documentary, these old stories are cool, but we not dead. And so you got to round it off and bring in the young Dolphs and the little babies and the other people that's come, the baby, the people that are new. Yeah. We have to tell that story, because some of these people walk in the studio when we're doing tours of these high schools and they don't know who Outkast is. Yeah. It's like a museum.
Dang.
And then we get over to the Travis Scott. Oh, y'all did Travis Scott? Y'all did Kendrick Lamar? And we're like, we ain't dead. So it's a weird dynamic to pay respect. Like the other day, YZ called me, thinking of a master plan. Mm-hmm. And Wise Intelligent from Poor Righteous Teachers. You remember them?
Yeah.
Yeah, they called me. He's like, Kurt, we at the studio. And I'm looking, I'm in Accra. I said, Wise Intelligent, is that the studio? Yeah. So I never met him. And I'm looking at the traffic. I said, man, I can't come back. And I said, look, man, I'm going to give you a discount on the rate if you take a picture in the studio. If you don't take a picture, I'm blah, blah, blah. he sent me the thing or whatever. And so when KRS was there, I went in and talked to him.
Wow.
And I just told him, I said, out of respect for you, you just going to pay for the engineer. The studio is free. Good. Mm. And then they wanted to come back the next day and they was trying to get that deal. I said, hey, man, I paid my respects to hip hop. Well, I'm going to give you the best rate for that we got for what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I understand that. But like, so when those older people, I think a lot of times, sometimes they think like Kool Moe Dee was there with KRS-One.
Oh, wow.
And like when Havoc them from Mobb Deep, they be thinking people don't know them.
Yeah.
I'm like, nigga, we know you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's cool to work on those projects like that. And it's cool to see them people light up.
Yeah.
When people still recognize
for
them.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
To listen to or watch this full episode, be sure to check out the Social Proof Podcast on your favorite listening platform or on YouTube.
Finally, you asked for it, and we created a Patreon, okay? We created an inner circle. We have amazing stories, amazing information, how-tos from the episodes. The only thing we're missing is a community. So it's about that time. We put together our Patreon, we put together our community, because we have to have conversation around the information. So even this podcast we're listening to right now, there needs to be conversation. I want to hear what you got. Like, let's throw some stuff back and forth. And because we're like-minded, we're all going in the same direction. When we connect in a community, we can connect on other stuff outside the community because we're building real relationships, okay? So check out the Patreon. We got 3 tiers. I don't care what tier you join. The support is appreciated.
What if I told you for $1, I will introduce you to hundreds of entrepreneurs every single morning this week from all across the country? You'll be able to talk to hundreds of entrepreneurs and I'll coach you for $1 this whole week. And I'll introduce you to some of my successful friends for $1 this week. Would you take part in that? Well, go to themorningmeetup.com because that's exactly what we're doing here, okay? The only organization that gathers entrepreneurs every single day for the betterment of entrepreneurship, okay? Every single day, Monday through Friday, we gather, we're growing, we're learning. We got a book club. Have you ever seen hundreds of entrepreneurs reading the same book every single chapter, every single day? We're growing together, okay? You need the environment to grow in. Themorningmeetup.com, $1. I'm going to give you all this for $1. If you want to stay, great. It's $79 a month after that. If not, no obligation. You can leave whenever you want. All right. TheMorningMeetup.com. I'll see you in the morning.